Welcome to the Five Kennies Podcast.
Hello, welcome to the Five Kennies Podcast. In this episode, we invite you to join us for a conversation that Eric and I had with Patty Card and our colleagues from the African Christian Church and Schools, Henry Mwangi and Patrick Maina, as we visited together with Guardians of Hope groups here in Nairobi. Hi, today we're in Safari Park Hotel, just outside of Nairobi, on our way to visit the ACCNS Guardians of Hope in Nairobi. And we're visiting with our friends Henry and Patrick. So we're going to stop for a few minutes and around the table talk a little bit about the Guardians of Hope. Maybe we'll begin with everyone introducing themselves.
Patty Card here.
Erica Kenny.
Henry Mwangi. And Patrick Maina.
So maybe we can start. It's really a privilege for us to have Patty Card with us, as she's visiting from Canada. Patty was the founder of Guardians of Hope, and she certainly gives a good perspective on where Guardians began within ACCNS. And so that's what we want to start today. So maybe, Patty, do you want to start off by telling us a little bit about when Guardians started and what was some of the reasons for its beginnings?
Actually, ACCNS was one of the original partners here in Africa. They began projects in 2005. And at that time, there were five projects that they had. And the reason that these projects were initiated was that in the area, the people were really recognizing a strong negative effect, many losses due to AIDS. And they were coming up with ways to meet and that with the resources that they had on hand. And it was a real privilege to be able to join them, CBM and ACCNS, together. Their resources of people on the ground and strong urgency to meet the needs of the people, orphans and elderly people, and also the resources that Canadians were able to bring together. And it was my privilege to be a part of that at the time, and to see us, the sprouts grow, and the impact as people got used to working together and building groups together to meet the needs of the communities around AIDS.
For people in Canada who've never been to Kenya, it might be interesting for them to know a little bit about the ACCNS, that as Guardians started there, really went through this church, the Africa Christian Church and Schools. Maybe Henry and Patrick, could you each take a moment to tell us a little bit, maybe first about the part of Kenya where ACCNS is, and the people who are involved in those churches, and then maybe a little bit about the church.
Okay, thank you so much. I think I just want to introduce ACCNS. First, ACCNS, there is an acronym meaning African Christian Church and Schools. The church is basically started in central Kenya. That's where it is dominating a lot. And that is where our churches are actually situated. Most of the churches are situated in central Kenya. But recently we have started to move out of central Kenya, and we have gone as far as Nairobi, we've gone as far as Rift Valley, Eastern Province, and most recently we have gone down to Mombasa. The founders of ACCNS, actually the church started in 1948, having a split from the AIC, the Africa Indian Church. They kind of disagreed with the missionaries from Scotland. And the one thing that made them to disagree was on education for their children. Mm-hmm. The missionaries could not allow the African children to go for further education. Actually, they just wanted them to have just elementary education, mm-hmm. just to be able to read the Bible in vernacular. And the elders of the church actually realized that their children are getting, they are becoming a bit disadvantaged. And therefore, since the missionaries could not agree to that, they actually split from the AIC, mm-hmm. and they started their own church, 1948. And now, if you listen to acronym, there is an S. S stands for schools. This is why, the reason for this is that ACCNS, they are very particular when it comes to education for their own children. And since then, the church started, and they started along with coming up with their own schools. Right now, we have about 23 primary schools and 19 secondary schools, where the children from the congregation, the children from the members of the church, go for their education. We are based at Thika right now. That's where our headquarters are. And Thika is in the north of Nairobi, about 40 kilometers from Nairobi town. And this is where our headquarters are located. We have about 150 churches nationally in Kenya.
Much of what he had said is in terms of education. As he has said, the church has been very specific in terms of offering our children education. And recently, we are now about to register our university that we again be based in Thika. So today is a great moment to have Patricia back, having left for Canada, and still forging to see the vision that she had for the HIV and AIDS being realized. GOH, as he said, the area was started in 2005 with only 5 projects. That was Kigumo Roa, Gatanga, Kigumo Apa, and
Kandara.
Yeah. Those were the only projects that were there that time. But before then, I was not working with ACCNS, but I was a community leader, and I was heading the Kigumo Roa HIV and AIDS project. So as he said, one of the reasons why we started the project was started is to ensure that the orphans, the people who are living with HIV and AIDS, were offered hope. During that time, a lot of people had lost hope and they were suffering. And as a church, we strongly feel that there is a need to really offer these people hope. Right now, as we talk today, we are having 9 projects, and we are looking forward to having one more project to be based at Thika, where our offices are located. And we do hope that by the end of maybe this year, we'll have achieved something to ensuring that Thika has a project to cater for HIV and AIDS, both people living with HIV and AIDS and even their orphans. Thank you.
Patrick, how did you find out about the group that you led afterwards, but how did you... You weren't part of the ACCNS church, so how did you find out about that HIV/AIDS group?
I was still a member of ACCNS church, uh-huh. And when the project was being started, the regional minister had to look for people who had the background of HIV and AIDS, and I happened to be, that time I was working with an NGO, so I happened to be aware of issues that were affecting our communities. Mm-hmm. So I came in as a resource person, mm-hmm. to offer trainings. And even to, because that time there was a lot of stigma. And I'm so happy that by the end of maybe 2 years, the stigma had reduced and people had started accepting themselves. Because there before you were asking people to come to meetings, but because of stigma, nobody could come and be open to say that I'm living with HIV and AIDS. Mm-hmm. But today, majority of them, we are using them even to train others. Mm-hmm. There's a Rede Fesha Wangari. We have been using her to train others. Because she accepted the situation, and now she's living positively and even reaching to others. So it's been very encouraging, mm-hmm. to see what has changed, and the hope that we have been able to offer to the people who are living with HIV and AIDS. Mm-hmm. They are no longer victims, but they are our brothers, they are our sisters, some of them are our mom, and even our dad.
I'm really interested with, as we have Patty with us today, a bit of... Patty's perspective over the last 5 going on 6 years now of some of the challenges that have been unique to ACCNS as Guardians has tried to work within the communities. I know some of the challenges will be related to the culture of the church, some to the unique communities where the church works. We've already talked a lot about stigma in past podcasts, but I know there's a lot of other issues around gender equality and things like that. So maybe Patty, would you want to speak to that?
As Patrick mentioned, for people to be real, for people to be honest with what they were feeling, to say that it was difficult to join, was also part of a bigger picture that traditionally you didn't talk about things personal or issues between husbands and wives. If there were issues of difficulty with your children, it was a family matter. It was within your close unit. So it was difficult in other ways, culturally, to bring these things out in a public place where people are meeting together. So, and stigma added to this. Mm. So there were huge obstacles for people to overcome at the very beginning. And that what was pushing this is that people were dying. Parents were dying. Mm. And people were realizing we can no longer be quiet. And very thankfully, church leaders were willing to start breaking the old pattern. But it was difficult for them as well. They were part of the culture. And you don't, as a leader, want to appear to be doing something that is radically different for fear you may actually be asked to step aside. You're not within the normal cultural bounds or the church bounds. So that, I think, was part of it. We have a strong patriarchal society, and so their decision making was very important in the community and in the family. And yet it was the women who were saying, we need help. And to have that recognized is a big step. To say that we'll work together as men and women. It was a process. It didn't happen suddenly. And the other issue that I remember coming up, I think, Henry, when you joined us, because for the first 3 years we had another chairperson for the Africa Christian Church and Schools, and that person was involved a lot in the leadership of the church, did not have as much time to invest, and it was really important that we have strong leadership for the people in the groups to go to and depend on for the resources to be on time, for training, and for just the psychological support that was very strongly needed. The other thing that was mentioned was youth. The church had a heart for their youth, and they were seeing that they were going into things, being discouraged because they couldn't get into school, even with education available to primary. What do you do when you get to secondary? You can't continue. The poverty that was pushing this to happen, and also that how do you as an adult talk to a youth about these things? The way had to change. Instead of saying to the youth, you must do this, you must do that, and they hear you but they keep continuing doing what they're doing, now it needed to be, how are you as a youth going to respond to these issues? And empowering the youth to actively take part in their own destiny, their own futures. They had a fairly good spiritual background, but how do we integrate that into their everyday lives? And I remember that being a very big issue for you. And we struggled with it together, did more training with it together. And as a result, there were some very good activities initiated. And maybe I can let you talk about some of those that you saw to be most, have the most impact.
Just to add on what Pat has said, is that when the first case of HIV and AIDS was reported in Kenya, that was back in 1984, people didn't take it serious. But as we went along, the churches realized that the people that are being so much affected by the epidemic are actually the followers of the churches. And therefore, there was no alternative other than the church now taking the leading role in actually making their people aware there is a danger that has come, and they need to take their some precautions. And therefore, our church was not exceptional. We also came in and we started creating some kind of awareness to our people. There is an epidemic that has come, and it is actually affecting our people. And therefore, it was our responsibility to take up that and make them aware about the disease. There were some challenges, quite a number of them, because initially, as she has just put it, it is not very normal for an adult to talk to a youth about sexual matters. Again, these things are never talked openly from the African perspective. You have to wait until you go to the bedroom with your wife as well, you can talk about those kind of things. Mm. But the situation actually brought it out that things had to be talked out openly for if we wanted our people to survive. And therefore, we took that bold stand and we started now creating awareness amongst our people. The other thing that was there, the other challenge was there was actually the stigma that came along with the epidemic, because the disease was associated with immorality, and therefore nobody wanted to be associated with the disease. The moment you mentioned about HIV and AIDS, people could actually stand up and go, because they don't want to talk about anything about it, and therefore people had a lot of stigma. I remember one time that people used to be buried. Nobody wanted to touch the dead body of a victim. Mm-hmm. People used to wear gloves and using polyvinyl papers, not just to touch them. And therefore, and this actually included even our pastors, the spiritual leaders. I think that indicated that there was a lot of stigma even amongst the leaders. And this one continued, but we thank God today that there's a lot of awareness. Stigma has gone down, and people are now talking about it freely, not like there before. The other challenge was that it was discrimination. There was a lot of discrimination, because the moment you are noted that you're suffering from this kind of a disease, nobody wanted to associate with you. And therefore, you could actually be, get discriminated. And what used to happen is that people used to be locked inside somewhere because he's a victim or she's a victim, and she has nothing to do with the other people now. People have nothing to do with him or her, and therefore, they really suffered that kind of discrimination. Mm-hmm. I thank God today that we have been able to bring down the rate of discrimination, the rate of stigma, and people now, they are talking about it freely, and the GOH has actually done a great job in terms of creating this kind of awareness. Mm-hmm. Apart from the creation of awareness, we have been doing other supportive activities to the same families that are affected by the disease, especially assisting the orphans in terms of school fees. And also assisting the guardians to these orphans in terms of actually raising their own incomes such that they are able to support the orphans the best way possible.
Another part of the challenge that are still existing even today is on gender issue. But I thank God that recently Henry and Ruth, they visited Tanzania to prepare a curriculum on HIV, gender and human rights.
Yes.
HIV and AIDS issues has been on women alone. It's part of our charity even today, because most of the communities that we are visiting, you only find women who are coming openly with the issue of HIV and AIDS, but very few men are there. That means HIV and AIDS has been left to be an issue of women only, whereas it's affecting both men and women. It's affecting children, both boys and girls. So it's still another challenge that we are still working on. But we thank God that with that recent the curriculum that has been developed, we'll be able to use it and to ensure that HIV and AIDS, for it to be fought effectively, it has to cover all the two parts, the way the part of female and the part of the male.
Patrick, you're getting competition with the parrot in the background and someone making coffee next door. So we apologize for the background noise. Just as we close today, I know Eric and I have really valued the journey we've been on with Henry and Patrick and the ACCNS, especially since we returned to Kenya in August after our short time in Canada. It's been very encouraging to see how you've been pulling the churches together and how you've been empowering people in leadership within your churches, within the groups. I think we'd be remiss to not mention that the work of the ACCNS is also work of a community, because when you're working in a community, you're not just working with church members, but you're drawing people from all different backgrounds. There are even Muslim women in some of your groups. And it's just an embodiment of the gospel as your churches reach out to those who have been affected by this condition. Just as we close today, we're on our way to visit some beneficiaries. These are women who have been a part of the program, and they've had some dramatic change in their lives. Maybe just as we close, if there are people in Canada praying for transformation to happen through Guardians of Hope in the lives of people, is there something that people in Canada can be praying for? As you think of specifically about the women that we're going to be visiting today here in Nairobi who have been a part of the program, what way can the church in Canada be praying for these individuals?
One of the ways that the church can respond, we are trying to offer them financial support such that they are able to support themselves, such that they are no longer dependent on the resources that we are giving to them. Because even locally, we have a lot of resources that we need to make sure that our people, they realize the importance of the local resources that we have. And once they make use of them, they will be able to be empowered and they will no longer be dependent. Number two, as a church in Canada, we are grateful so much for the support they have been giving us so far. But as we are praying that they continue even to pray for us, such that the unity of the church can be felt, such that whenever Canada gives something, even the church, the local churches can also be contributing, such that at the end of the day, our port will be having maybe more resources than we're having currently. That we should pray for the even empowerment of our local churches.
Patrick is really focusing on the fact that it is the people on the ground. We have good leadership. We know through from the Kennys to the Patrick and Henry to the local administrators. But the people on the ground are the ones who every day are finding ways to empower each other, work together, encourage each other to wisely use, as they say, the resources that they have. And I think that today we're going to be visiting some of the households. Some of them, these are mobile households in the city. They have different challenges than those who are located on their farms in the community. So praying for the urban church as well as the rural church, which we often hear about, their particular challenges of sometimes their business is started, they have to move, or the government moves them. That can happen to them, and they have to start all over again. So that is part of, if they're going to grow, and have financial stability, that is a challenge for them. And children in the city, and young people in the city, they are faced with many temptations. On the way to schools, things can change in their lives radically. And drugs and some of these things are much more available, and of course lead to behavior that can endanger them. So remembering these households that we visit today is good. We really appreciate that.
Thank you for listening to the Five Kennys podcast. If you'd like to learn more about our life and ministry in Africa, please check out our blog at www.fivekennys.blogspot.com. And if you're interested in learning more about the ministry of Canadian Baptists in Africa and throughout the world, please check out the website at cbmin.org.